This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringue-a-tang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All throws with monkey sounds in there and called good.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Good afternoon.
Hey, happy Thursday. Danny and Dusty with ya. How are we all doing on this Thursday?
Good?
Good.
Good? You can be a little Thursday?
It's a good little Thursday. Look, man, I love basketball that gets done by 7:30.
Yeah, that was great.
Road trips to the Central and Eastern time zones are wonderful.
Okay. Where are we? The sports calendar... I believe we live in the best time zone for sports.
Oh God, it's not even a question. It's not even a question.
I mean, it is great because we get our sports all day long. Like people complain about like a 7:30 kick here. Like I don't want to drive. You know, we have to drive to Eugene and all that. Games on the East Coast start at 8:30.
Yeah,
and they drive an hour and an hour and a half and 3 hours
mm-hmm.
and.
No.
That's not it. Like,
gross.
The complaint about, like, Pac-12 After Dark was that it's not... The local fans shouldn't complain about it. The national fans don't get to see any sports on the West Coast because a 7:30 kick is 10:30 on the East Coast.
Which means you're wrapping up at, you know, 1.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, we were watching Monday Night Football, and it's one of the great things that I get to enjoy with my son,
mm-hmm.
right? We watch Monday Night Football. Our whole family does. It's not just me and my son. You got to watch it because I'm working. But I was thinking about that. Like, if we lived on the East Coast, we wouldn't do that.
No.
It's bedtime. That game kicks off, and it's bedtime.
Yeah, you're watching Solo.
Yeah.
And you're over on the second screen, or like me, like... When I go to watch games, I don't force feed it to my wife yet. I'll go in the office and go. I'm not going to make her watch Bengals Cowboys.
Yeah,
like, I'm not going to do that to her.
Yeah.
And look, if it's a good game and I want to go watch it on the big TV, then we're like, hey, sweetheart.
I got a 10-year-old daughter that says he throws too many interceptions, and I think that's a life win.
Yeah, though, God,
I think
yes.
That's a dad win.
Yeah.
I really do.
No, I mean, I think we're lucky in the fact that our respective wives are pro sports.
Yeah, pro sports,
yeah.
Pro sports.
But also, if I know it's going to be just craptacular,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm not gonna make you watch this. Like, that's not, we're not doing that.
We do as a family.
Yeah.
You know what we're doing? We're going to watch this. Mm. We're going to hate watch it.
Make fun of them?
Sometimes I get vetoed, and like the last 3 minutes of last night's Blazer game, secondary screen has to come up. I got to get the computer out, and we bring up the Xfinity stream on there because they're like, we're watching a movie.
Mm.
We're watching a show.
What were we switching to?
This is, I hate that I'm saying this because it's a week earlier than I feel comfortable with.
Christmas movies?
We finished The Santa Claus last night. Oh. I know.
My in-laws and my wife, their Christmas movie is Elf.
Oh, Elf's a great movie.
Like, to like the million, like Elf is like their defining Christmas movie, which is a little bit weird.
That is a little weird.
Because it's not that old.
Yeah. Well, but when you get it, it gets your hooks in you, right? Like, we all have, I think that the thing about, and this is what is going to drive me crazy, starting this a week or two early, I don't like it because by Christmas time, I'm sick of all these movies.
Yeah.
I'm done with them. I don't want to watch them. And
with the exception of Christmas Vacation.
But that's it. You have your rhythm. You have the movies that you always watch. And I always hold off on Christmas Vacation. We'll watch it like, sometimes we watch it after the football's over on Thanksgiving.
Mm.
We'll fire up the Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
But then that's a Christmas Eve movie.
Yep.
And then when my wife and I are watching our wrapping presents and stuff on Christmas, late on Christmas Eve, it's hand up.
Bad
man,
Santa?
Man card may be revoked for this. Love Actually. Great Christmas movie. Hugh Grant, Liam Neeson, where he doesn't kill anybody. Actually, his wife died.
Oh, okay, yeah. I had to pull up the cover to like kind of get
it. It's a British movie.
Yeah, Keira Knightley.
Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Yeah.
Look,
she had a period in our lives.
RIP guy that played Snape and fell off
Alan Rickman,
yeah.
Fell off Nakatomi Tower,
yeah. It's a star-studded cast.
Bajillion people in it.
Yeah.
Emma Thompson, Bill Nighy.
Yeah.
Again, Hugh Grant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of people.
But I like that. I like that movie. And we do that's a Christmas tradition. Bad Santa is an all-timer. I love Bad Santa.
Bad Santa, like that.
That's my dad's favorite Christmas
the
movie.
The first time you watch that movie, you laugh so hard, like at so many uncomfortable things.
Oh yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's
fantastic.
It's the anti-Christmas movie.
But in the best way.
But in the best way possible. Yeah. And they bring it home at the end where he's still a degenerate, but he has a soul.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's a real-life Grinch. I mean...
Total Billy Bob Thornton moment. You know he's got a new show, right?
Yes, on Land Paramount.
We watched the first episode the other night. It's a good watch.
Yeah. Who else is in that? Somebody else is in that, too. Billy Bob and someone else that I like is in that. What's it called again? It's like oil.
Landman, yeah.
Landman. Yeah, it's an oil.
Well, I mean, John Hamm's in it.
Yeah, John Hamm.
But also, so is Ali Larter.
Yeah, I love Ali Larter.
It's another Taylor Sheridan joint, too.
It's another Taylor Sheridan one. Yeah. Like,
wasn't she in Heroes, Ali Larter? She was in that show, Heroes.
Wasn't she Whipped Cream Bikini?
So.
It's
Whipped Cream Bikini, yeah.
Yeah.
Demi Moore, who's very high up on my list when I was a young lad.
Well, Final Destination, Legally Blonde, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a great... Ali Larter, still
Taylor Sheridan is
still
on,
hot.
Yeah,
okay.
She still got it.
Yeah, all right.
Taylor Sheridan is on like a generational run right now.
Yeah,
Yellowstone. Have you watched Lioness?
Never have I ever.
Oh, buddy,
heard of it.
Buddy, also on Paramount.
Oh, really?
God, what is her name? Zoe Saldana.
Zoe Saldana.
Avatar.
Oh. Okay, yeah, yeah.
The Lioness program is a real program that exists in special operations.
Okay.
It's where they take a woman and use them basically as bait.
Oh.
But they're highly trained operatives, and it's dark.
Sweet.
It's a.
I just started watching on Peacock, Jackal.
Ooh.
Which is, don't know the guy's name. He's in the, that Harry Potter spinoff about the... wizards and whatnot.
Is it the Day of the Jackal?
No, it's just called Jackal. And he's basically...
Oh, Eddie... Yeah, no, it's called the Day of the Jackal. Eddie Redmayne.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what you're talking about.
I just thought it was called Jackal. That's all that comes up on my... on the old Peacock there. But it's a... Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Day of the Jackal.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's the show. It's pretty good. He's like a hitman, and like he gets paid big bucks to kill very important people. And when I was watching it,
I'm in,
and I wanted to get your thoughts on this because, and this is not a spoiler, but it's like, what is it, MI6?
Mm-hmm.
M6, the British intelligence.
Yeah.
They're trying to track him and find him because he kills like a German guy who's running for like Chancellor of Germany or whatever. And he has a gun. And he has the longest recorded sniper shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically they're trying to hunt him down because the gun that he used is impossible. And what it is it's a sniper rifle with the barrel long enough, right? Mm-hmm. And it is in two parts. The barrel's in two parts, which is supposed to be impossible to make. But he found a gun manufacturer that can make it. He can break down his sniper rifle to the point where he can put it in a suitcase and he can check it like at an airport. Like you don't need all of the parts, just and he can take it with him.
Yeah.
The barrel is the key point here.
Yeah. The reason why you have a solid barrel is because if it
the has grooving,
any, not just the rifling, it also breaks up, but also unless it's true to fit, like, I mean, which would mean like a literal perfect match. A match barrel, you're talking about like losing gas and back pressure, which can change the flight path and trajectory based on what your feet per second is. But also when you're talking about that same thing, you're going to lose perfection in the rifling. And what the thing is, like, if you're talking about like shots over 1,000 meters, even the best shooters, when you're talking about hand load ammo, you're basically shooting at a garbage can. Any bit of change, like in which we're talking wind, humidity, the Coriolis effect, like there's just so many different things. Like when you talk about like the world's longest shots, there's a lot of luck.
Yeah.
Like there's like, I'm not kidding. You're talking, when you're talking about when you get out to those ranges, like the 10 longest shots, you're effectively shooting at Oscar the Grouch trash can.
Yeah. I think they said 3,500 meters is where he shot this guy from.
Yeah, that's an impossible shot.
Yeah.
I mean, that 3,500 meters, it would be, what, 2.5 miles?
Yeah.
Give or take.
But it's a badass show. I think you'd really like it. It's very killy. There's a lot of disguise. It's crazy. It's a good show. Well, I don't know if it's a good show, but
there's supposedly a new longest shot. In mankind, that has happened in the Ukraine war, and there's apparently video evidence of it, which, you know, we don't really know. But in Iraq, a Canadian, a Special Operations Canadian,
might have been 2,500.
Yeah, because 3,500 is,
I think it's 2,500.
3,500 is way out there.
Yeah.
But again, this guy in last year, his was at 3,800.
3,800.
So. Oh.
Well.
But again, you're talking about almost 2.4 miles.
Yeah, it was, it's crazy. It's a good show.
That's insane.
And there's a lot of like government corruption and interference going in.
Oh, no way.
It's great.
That definitely sounds down my alley.
It is down your alley.
I love some killy political thrillers.
The Day of the Jackal. That's a good one. But this may sound bad. British accents are hard for me sometimes. Like, I have to listen to loud.
There's different ones that are harder. Like, if you get, like, the Cockney, like...
Yeah, no, it's not even that. It's just a normal... I feel like they're just talking too quiet.
Mm.
And then, like, so I have to turn it up, and then the gunshots start, and I'm like, God, turn it back down.
It's true to form.
I can't. It bothers me.
There are only two things I can't stand in this world. Yep. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dutch.
All right. Well, this took quite a turn.
Yeah. Anytime you want to talk about
Christmas movies,
sniper kill shots, I'm
you're in.
I'm in.
You're in. Ernest Saves Christmas is my classic.
Did Ernest ever do anything that was cancelable, or was he just that weird?
No. He didn't do anything cancelable.
I thought, for some reason, I associated him with that, too.
No. I'm sure some of the stuff is not great.
Mm.
What was his name? He had a
oh God.
Vorel, wasn't it? Yeah, wasn't it his last name?
It's a very unfortunate name. He definitely didn't change it to that for Hollywood.
Yeah.
It was Jim Varney.
Jim Varney. It's Ernest P. Worrell.
Yeah.
And it was Jim Varney. I like Jim Varney. I don't think Jim Varney was canceled.
He kind of reminds me of like goofier Mike Rao or Mike Rowe.
Ooh, good call. RIP, right? By the way.
Yeah. Wait, Mike or?
No, Ernest. Jim Varney.
Yeah. He died a while ago, didn't he?
Yeah.
Super dead.
Yes.
Like 2008?
No, 2000. He's been dead for 24 years.
Yeah, like a long time.
I feel like I should have RIP'd him a while ago, but...
It's all right.
When did we stop the RIP? No, I don't think he was canceled. I'm looking here.
He died the hero before becoming the villain?
Yeah, well, when you die in 2000, you can't get canceled. Yeah. That was like before we were canceling people.
Well, no, that's not true, because we've canceled like literally dead presidents.
Well, yeah, that is true.
Two high schools.
I mean,
down the street who have had their names changed.
Yeah. Andrew Jackson wasn't a good guy.
Yeah. I mean, were any of them?
Even in his time. Look, but even in his time, he wasn't a good. They were like, dude, this guy's an a-hole.
I mean, have you heard Shane Gillis talk about George Washington?
Yeah. 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 Noted historian Shane Gillis.
I mean, he presents some pretty interesting points. Like this 6'2" ginger with wooden teeth and, is it cow teeth and goat teeth?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, but he chopped down that cherry tree.
Yeah. just absolute lunatic lunging at you out of the forest.
Yeah. Jim Varney, such a good guy. In his Wikipedia entry.
There's no blue links to...
No, listen to this. Varney was married twice. First to Jacqueline Drew and then to Jane Varney. Both marriages ended in divorce, although he remained friends with his ex-wives.
Oh, see, that's how you know something was wrong.
Well, you're talking the NDA?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, yeah, man.
There's something wrong there.
I think I'm going to say that was a good note on Jim Varney. They just knew marriage wasn't for them, you know? I wonder, I don't know how rewatchable those movies are because,
I mean,
most shows that we watched when we were kids, like The Jetsons, for God's sakes, you watch, or The Flintstones. You watch The Jetsons or The Flintstones, you'll be like, whoa.
Oh, yeah. The Flintstones, especially. You go back to that and You know what I did watch?
Dude,
there was
we watched the first episode of The Jetsons, and I kid you not, George Jetson has a line where this may be a direct quote, but it's something pretty dang close to get back in the kitchen.
Mm.
I was like, what?
There was a 5-minute montage of Bugs Bunny cartoons from like our childhood, mid early 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, there isn't a single thing here you could do today. Like, not, I can't even repeat it on the radio type stuff. And I was like, it's funny. It's definitely funny, but you can't say that.
Can't say that anymore. Can't say that anymore.
So,
all right. Well, we got a lot of really good Christmas movie talk going on here on the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. Your dollar goes further at Vancouver Ford. They treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them online, vancouverford.com. Thurman Merman, your name is Thurman Merman. Bad Santa. Love that. All right. Let's go here. Let's start with that Blazer game last night.
Yeah.
Boy, we got a lot that we'll get to. The Blazers, we got a lot of Blazers notes and nuggies moving forward. I got a question. Who should Oregon want in the Big Ten championship game? We'll discuss that. We got Thursday night football tonight in a game that, we're all just expecting the Stellars to rock the Browns, right?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we are.
It would upset the apple cart, certainly, if this is the game the Steelers drop.
Yep. But this show will start. Tumania was not just a trend. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. The Portland Trail Blazers fall to the Oklahoma City Thunder 109-99 last night. And if that is how every Blazer game goes the rest of the season, I'm in for it. I'm in. Like, that is how you properly lose a basketball game.
Well, so much of this is like, yeah, this is what you want to see, da-da-da, but it won't be like this very often because there's so many, and this is kind of what we were talking about yesterday with the whole idea of, you know, the consistency of outliers, right? Mm-hmm. The Blazers aren't going to shoot 40% from three very often.
No, and that, I'm not saying in that regard, I'm not taking it that granular. I'm talking effort mm-hmm. on both ends of the floor,
sure.
development, and it can be a different guy every game, but what we have seen is the development of Tumani Kamara from where he started to where he's at right mm-hmm. now. You are seeing a guy in front of our very eyes grow, develop, and become not just a great defender
yeah,
in the NBA.
I actually got some texts last night from folks that I really respect and trust in the league, and they're like, he's going to get like legitimate all-defensive team love. Like, he's that good.
All right, where is Kamara right now on the list of, like, the most versatile defenders in the NBA? Because I think something that you mentioned yesterday, which it is really good, and I think that people need to acknowledge a little bit more, is the fact that it's the variety of players that he is giving fits yeah. to
I mean,
that are not just scrubs. Considered the best at their traits, and he is putting them in blenders.
His last three games, he has defended Ant Edwards and Julius Randle and Trae Young and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You cannot have more different archetypes than those. A guy in Julius Randle who's 6'8", 6'9", 260 pounds, and is a Bologna China shop, one of the most dynamic athletes in the entire NBA in Ant Edwards, one of the slipperiest and manipulative players in the entire NBA in Trae Young.
And look, finesse and perimeter guy.
Yeah.
Perimeter player and a finesse guy.
And then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's maybe the most awkward guy in the NBA to guard because he's all about angles and change of pace and change of direction and getting you off balance. And Tumani made SGA's life hell last night.
Did not make a three. Half his points came from the free throw line.
Yeah. And I mean, and I watched some of the film when I got home last night. It's the beauty of having a game be done before 8:00. I could get home and do some film work. The stuff that he was doing, cutting off angles, 45s, just botting up. I tweeted it out last night right after it happened. He two picks him up and shuts off one whole side of the floor and just keeps him on one side. And SGA tries to get over and two knocks the ball away from him. And SGA just looks to the sky and just has this, what the bleep is this guy doing? It's the first quarter of this game. Leave me alone. Like, you could, the frustration level was peaking right out of the gate. Trae Young had the same look on his face. Julius Randle had the same. Like, guys are getting tired of him. And it's not because that he's doing anything dirty or, mm-mm. you know, give him the Draymond kidney punch. It's his energy and relentlessness is truly top in class. And I was looking at his tracking data last night. He's moving, covering more ground, and there's even more tracking data on the private side that I've seen that shows his effort based on how fast he accelerates and how much and how quickly he decelerates. He's in the effort expended, like actual energy, the math behind it, is one of the highest in the league.
Okay, how long can that last, though? I mean, he's 24 years old and he's young.
He's built like this. He's got a sicko motor. Like, this is what he has. Like, there's no, like, this is like
Bruce Bowen-y.
Yeah, it's Tony Allen. It's Bruce mm-hmm. Bowen. It's, you know, to an extent, Patrick Beverley. Like, you just go, I'm not going to let you. And if you ever see two is in phenomenal shape. Like, he's built like you'd never believe an NBA player. Like, it's like, that's not right. But he's got an engine and a motor that just keeps going. And he's getting the point defensively where it's like, no, he's getting real national recognition behind. Like, not in the sense of like,
yeah. ESPN. When midseason reports come out, you're going to start seeing him on most improved and all defensive
yes.
radars.
Like, like the people behind the scenes who really watch the film and really watch the games and appreciate guys like him, he is moving significantly up list. I think the two guys you can talk about the most in that vein this year among young guys, it's him and Dyson Daniels. Like, those are the two guys everybody's like, no, these guys are making real growth. As it pertains for Portland, you know, last night, you saw what happens when a team puts a scouting report together on Shaedon Sharpe.
Mm.
They would not let him get where he wanted to get to. Every time he came off a DHO, every time he came off a pin down, every time he came off any kind of pick and roll, they're sliding in front of him. They're reaching. They're smacking. I mean, he had 6 turnovers last night. And he's tightened his handle up. But you can see the development. But this is the when you talked about, like, you, this is the way you want them to lose games, or how to, you know, ethically tank, as it were. They were egregious from two, and they've been bad from two pretty much the entire season. Yeah. What kind of buoyed them was the fact that they did hit some threes. I think what you're saying for the most part is right. Like, it's much more enjoyable because of, but what the problem pops up, I think, for most fans who won't willingly admit this, is if they don't hit those threes last night, let's just flip the numbers. That OKC doesn't go 9 of 31. You know, say Portland goes 9 of 31 and the Thunder go 15 of 38. Then it's an absolute rout.
Sure. And you know what? But this is what I'm okay with, is that if we have these outlier games, we don't overreact to the outlier games. But I look at, all right, you lose a game where you're having struggles hitting from two, right? Mm-hmm. That is it. 6 guys scoring double figures, yep. And you don't have the Herculean Superman effort from Shaedon Sharpe, and he has 21 points, but 5 other guys scoring double figures, and then Scoot is at 9 points, and he leaves in, what, the third quarter with that hip contusion, and or the thigh contusion, quad contusion, and you go, he had 9 points on the game. He very easily could have been the 7th Blazer. Just put ball in hoop and not be just absolutely mind-numbingly bad at basketball, right?
Yeah, because
that's because we've seen that at times. I'm okay with you stating the fact that the Blazers couldn't hit the broadside of a barn inside the three-point arc. But you know what? They finally got some shots to fall from beyond the arc. It's not the worst thing in the world that you lose by 10 to that Oklahoma City team on the road. I'm okay with it. The effort was there.
Hey, they covered.
They did by 1.5. The effort was there on both ends of the floor. They turned over the ball an egregious amount.
And that is becoming something. They're second to last in the NBA in turnover rate. That's a mark of this team right now.
That's, guess what?
It's young.
Bad teams do is they turn the ball over. But you saw a little bit of balance on the offensive end. It's not just stand around and say, all right, Shaedon, all right, Jeremy, go, you guys score. We're just going to be passive watchers on the offensive end.
I think there's been, I mean, we're kind of up against it right now. I think that you're seeing, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but the identity of this team is really kind of coming together, what they are and kind of what they project to be kind of going on in the future.
All right, let's talk about that. Blazers lose 109-99. That's what, wins and losses, I don't care. I thought they played a pretty decent game, all things considered, against one of the best teams in the NBA. Their identity after Rust was SportsCenter. Identity of this Blazers team. You mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when we were talking, like, hey, they're forming an identity. We revisited it last week as well. Are we holding true with this young team?
Yeah, they are. And I think that's what so much of this, the Blazers broadcast, and Tom Haberstroh made a little clip going into the game last night talking about how big this team is. When this roster came together, we talked about it, I would say back in like late July, early August, something around those times. This was going to be the biggest team in the league. Like this, they're huge. They can put a lineup out on the floor where the smallest guy is 6'9". Like a truly functional lineup at where the smallest guy is 6'9".
Who'd handle the ball in that one?
Denny? Yeah.
Oh, okay. But I mean, even if you wanted to say you put Delano Banton at point, 6'7.5".
Yeah, 6'8". Yeah.
He's listed at 6'8", then that's still Gigantor. Yeah.
They've seen it. It's been like but defensively, it's been disruptive.
Well, just recently, we saw a lineup with Delano, Tumani, Denny, Jeremy, Klingon.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of those guys over 6'8".
And you take a look at this team, right? And the things that stand out for them are their. Let me pull up their half court. In the half court right now, they are atrocious. They are dead last in the league offensively.
All right.
Their points scored per 100 is 85.1.
All right.
For all of the We want to see Scoot and Shaden and Donovan. No, you don't, because you will lose a lot of games by a lot of points over 82 games. That's why I beat the drum because for Anthony so hard, not just because I like him, but because of the threat that he creates. Because they're as bad as they were offensively last year, Dusty, right now they're worse. Put that in perspective.
But it looks different when on the defensive end of the floor you have competency and competitiveness.
And if you look at where they're at defensively, and this is where that identity comes from, is they are right now, let me pull it up, I believe last night they were 12th, depending on kind of where it fits at. Yes, they're 12th. So they're currently 12th at a defensive rating of 113, which is pretty good.
And look, the Chauncey detractors, you have a lot of ammo, and it's justified largely. One thing that those numbers that you just said, that is a team that is still playing hard for a coach because offensively, we know heading into this year, they lacked shooters.
Yep.
They lacked creators. Skill and creators offensively, right? But on the defensive end of the floor, they have bought in.
They've got defensive talent.
Schematically. And effort-wise to what they want to do.
And look, you've got, like, Donovan Klingon is this, I hate saying this because I don't like putting these kind of expectations on guys, but he has, I was talking to a former, like, multi-time all-star in the NBA just the other day, and we were talking about young players on Portland, and he was talking about Shaden. He's like, he's got the juice. Like, there's something there. You just want to see how far it could go. But he was talking about Donovan. He goes, he shuts the paint down. Like, he's got it. He goes, just looking at him, he's got the goods.
Hit his second three-pointer of the year last night.
Had a little something to say to the OKC bench. It was fun.
More show.
But, you know, him and Rob shut down the paint last night, which, again, made the game a lot more difficult for the Thunder because Lou Dort just kept throwing balls up the rim. That
Dortcher chamber.
Look, Dort's offense last night, every time he took a shot, it was a win for the Blazers. But I think, again, that plays on the identity of this team right now. Bigger, longer, stronger, physical. And I was talking to probably 10 different folks last night, the evaluators and front office folks, just about this team. And the analogy that I have made for this team is they are Swamp Thing. They are going to come out of the muck, and they are going to grab you, and they are going to pull you into the muck with them. Mm-hmm. They are not going to join you on land.
That's a great text on the Vancouver Ford text line. We talk about what is the identity of the Blazers, and as Danny's described games at times as a rock fight, this is what Chauncey Billups' identity really is and probably has always wanted, as this is what his teams in Detroit were.
Yes.
It's kind of interesting. No doubt, this is where he's comfortable.
100%.
And this is where he has seen the most success, and we talked about this yesterday, how there is a pendulum swinging back in the NBA towards a being more big man-centric again, right? It will never go back to the 90s or the early 2000s when Chauncey Billups and his teams were dominating teams physically and down low. But that style of play, it's been a slow morph going back that way as teams have realized, wait, we don't have Splash Brothers across the NBA.
No, I mean, look, the Blazers are probably too far on the pendulum to the other side right now.
Yeah.
Like, they need some offensive juice. Like, but that's the whole point, is that's why you tank. Is that you go get, look, whether it's Cooper Flagg or Ace Bailey, either of those guys, they would immediately, day one, be the most effective offensive player the Blazers have on their team. Like, I'll talk about the young guys kind of going forward, right? And that so much of that has to do with just how little the Trailblazers have developed offensively. And I'm not saying that as a shot, just where they're at right now. Scoot's offense is still very limited. Shaden, while showing real growth, is showing he's, as of right now, he's not ready for the primary offensive creation burden. And as much as like people are like, well, the ball's not stopping, it's not as much isolation. It's actually more. The ball, they're actually moving the ball a little bit less, and there's actually more isolation because they've changed to more of a matchup hunting style. And when you're talking about like the defensive effort and forcing those turnovers, they are. They're, depending on how you slice it, they're either 11th or 12th. Like they're 12th in total turnovers forced, or they were going into last night. Or they're 11th in turnovers forced per 100 possessions, which is kind of how I like to look at it because that gives you a better idea of like what they're doing on basically a per-game basis. But the problem is they're 25th in the league in turning over turnovers. 15% of the time that they force a turnover, they're giving it right back on the turnover.
Hmm.
On top of that, they have the worst effective field goal percentage and the lowest point per possession in transition.
I would like to just go back to the Chris Murray poke away and then dunk last night, where they did get a steal in transition bucket.
And if you, again, if you're looking at like the glass half full side of this, they're so bad at converting on that end right now that if they make any gains, it'll look pretty substantial.
Yeah. I mean, when you said that, I was just going back to how many times have we seen success out of those? And that was ingrained recently, obviously. Chris Murray gets a poke away. JG kind of gives him a lead pass and he dunked it. But more often than not, it is either they slow the ball back up and they're in the half court and a turnover happens, or they miss, you know, a jumper in transition.
Yeah, because if they get in the half court, what did we talk about earlier? They're the worst half court offense in the league.
Yeah.
So they're the worst transition offense and the worst half court. So it's kind of like.
And turnover ratio.
Yes. So they're currently.
So good.
They're currently 28th in the league in turning the ball over.
This is all to say, last night was really good.
But they're third in the league in forcing turnovers. And I believe they're still. They're actually now upside down. So they're forcing a turnover 17.2% of the time. They're turning the ball over 17.5%. Big part of that is they had a season high in turnovers last night.
Yeah, it looked like it.
Well, when you get 10 turnovers in your starting front court, that's tough.
Just entertain me, clowns.
But yeah, I think that's the thing. Is like, even though the basketball on the offensive end is very ugly, and I mean very, very, very ugly, only a mother could love, even then it's probably not your favorite child, but the effort and intensity that they're getting on defense, the commitment, like the way that they're pulling other teams. Like, and this isn't, they've done this to literally everyone. This isn't a one-off thing. Even a team as good as Oklahoma City, you had to have the heroics from Jalen Williams last night for OKC to come away with a win.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
no doubt.
I think they're in a good spot. And as much as like everyone's like, oh, they're winning too much, don't worry about it.
It'll be okay.
Like, this is what I say when I talk about the numbers being indicative. When you're turning the ball over at this rate and your half-court offense is this bad and your transition offense is this bad, over the course of 82 games, you're just not going to win.
Okay.
Like, you can't. The math isn't there for you. Like, they hit 15 of 38 threes last night.
And you know what? That's okay.
And on some nights, that 15 of 38 is going to go the 9 of 38, and that margin is going to look a lot worse. And you'll probably feel like, oh, they played horrible. But it's the exact same game they've been playing. It's just a few more shots went in. Or in that case, a few more shots didn't.
All right. 503-864-6326. That is the Vancouver Ford text line. Get your feedback in. We've got... it's really good feedback. We will get to those, and I want to make sure we have we get some in the queue here, because there's some really good questions coming in about this Blazers team. We'll get to those at 1:15. Okay, we're gonna revisit the Blazers 1:15. All right, because there is some news out of the world of college football, and some of it is not surprising one bit. Mm. Another piece goes, oh, all right. All right, maybe he wasn't lying to us all. Danny Dusty on the Fan. You don't say. Mm-hmm. You pile this one away. Travis Hunter said, yeah, I'm for sure entering the NFL draft this year. The two-way Colorado star, now the Heisman Trophy front runner.
He's going to be the number one overall pick.
Going to the National Football League.
There's no way you don't take him, right?
I mean, I think there's a way you don't take him.
But I mean, in this class.
I think he's the number one non-quarterback.
Is there a quarterback in this class who's like, yeah, you're going to like.
Well, no, it's not. It's not. Is there a quarterback? Is there a team desperate for a quarterback?
Yes. There is, because the Giants are certainly there.
And you have to get, and this is what happens, is you trade up because you just want to have the top pick of a quarterback in a weak quarterback class. Usually doesn't bode well for teams to do that, but we know that history will tell us that's what teams do.
Okay, so as of right now, Jacksonville doesn't need a quarterback. They're not making that move away from Lawrence yet.
Uh-uh.
Tennessee, they definitely would.
Yep.
Cleveland, they would and probably will, but...
That's not a good situation.
The Giants and then the Raiders are all tied at 2-8.
Yeah. And
the Raiders are 100% on that list.
We have one. We have one team that isn't. Well, Titans too. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, there's. So, yeah.
I mean, but if you're Jacksonville and
non-quarterback, and that skews everything.
Yeah,
he should be. He's the best player in college football.
If you're
that's why he's going to win the Heisman Trophy, and he deserves to win the Heisman Trophy. And if he doesn't win the Heisman Trophy, it's stupid.
I'm at the point where, yeah, he should win it. If it's not him, Genty. If it's not one of those two guys, we're doing it wrong.
Yeah,
it's like, nobody else is close. Duck fans, shut up.
I don't think anybody is touting that anymore.
And it's not just you, Duck fans, and the Cam Ward guys. Like everybody else, everyone else is out. It's those two guys.
Yeah,
it's those two guys. I don't even know if you invite a third guy to New York, like legitimately.
Yeah.
Like it's. Those two guys are so far out in front of everybody else, it's not even funny. But the whole Travis Hunter thing, like, if let's say it's Jacksonville that goes number one.
Mm-hmm.
You take Travis Hunter, right?
Yes, you do. You do. And then you figure out where you're going to play him. Like, the hard part with Travis Hunter, though, is that he's not the best corner or the best receiver in the class.
He's the second best corner and second best wide receiver in the class?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does McMillan, even though he's had the down year that he's had, is he still a wide receiver one?
Yeah.
Just because he's just so big and talented?
Yeah. And they have a full on scheme change, conference change. Like everything changed in Arizona. But you look at it, you go, all right. But he can do both like really damn well. And he said today that he wants to do both still. He's going to prove everybody wrong. Like, oh, I can't play corner and wide receiver in the NFL. Watch me. Where there are fewer plays in the NFL, but it is more taxing. The hits are harder and the season is longer. Like that is going to be very real. But yes, you take him and you say, we'll figure out which position we want to have him focus on the most. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see him play both ways, not to the level and extent that he does right now, because 170 plays a game. No, not sustainable over a 17 week season. Not at all. Especially when you have to turn around and you play on a Sunday and a Thursday. Yeah. All right. 3 games in 10 days. We see that all the time in the National Football League. You can't do that playing every single snap of every single game.
No,
but you can figure it out. But he is going to go to the NFL, and I think that's going to be that'll be fun to watch him go to the next level. I love it because everybody loves to bash the number one overall recruit that doesn't pan out, and you know everybody's like, "Oh, see, remember him?"
What was the last time we had like a true number one recruit also live up to this level of hype? Clowney?
In college, it happened. Well.
Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, wasn't Caleb Williams number one recruit in the country? He won a Heisman Trophy.
I thought he was third or fourth. I could be mistaken.
But when a guy lives up to the hype and it's like not just the number one recruit, but then ends up being the number one draft pick, like that's pretty crazy. And I am really happy for the success. And like we can roll our eyes all we want. He did carve his own path. The dude went to an HBCU. Out of high school, he went to Jackson State and followed Dion and then went to Colorado with Dion. Like, it was a different path that a lot of people laughed at, a lot of people rolled their eyes at, and he's lived up to everything that everybody expected him to be and more because he's doing it on both sides of the football at an incredibly high level. So he's going to the NFL. Good for him. Everybody was then saying, well, guess what? You know what's going to happen now? Dion is going to be without Shadur, and he's going to be without Travis Hunter. He gone. Yesterday, he came out and what was his kickstand. I got my kickstand down in Boulder.
Yeah.
Well, today, he got a highly touted quarterback prospect, and quite literally on his recruiting trip, Shadur Sanders handed him
the keys. Yeah.
And Julian Lewis, the former USC commit at quarterback, has committed to Dion and the Colorado Buffaloes. Now, that doesn't mean that Dion is going to stay for sure. And that doesn't mean Julian Lewis is going to stay at Colorado for sure. Because if Dion goes, he's not staying there. He won't be there.
And you're seeing this happen with quarterbacks all over the place. USC flipped A&M's quarterback to them. There's another big quarterback that has been flipped, Florida's. or no, Florida State. I'm sorry. Florida State's quarterback got flipped. And then was it Notre Dame's quarterback got flipped, who I think is another top, another five-star guy?
No idea.
These quarterbacks, man, it's, they aren't locked in until they're locked in.
No.
It's pretty crazy.
Nope.
It's certainly a big part of it. And we saw this with the Jaden Rashada stuff with the money and the collectives and the meddling that kind of comes with that. And that kind of ties into what we were talking about yesterday and NIL and putting boundaries mm-hmm. around it. Is there any position that's more, I don't want to use the word manipulative, but I'm going to, that's more manipulative in the market right now than the quarterback position?
Mm-mm. No.
Just because of the importance.
Quarterbacks have so much leverage too. Mm-hmm. And they know the success of your team, and it hinges on you having a quarterback. But it's also like, I think that, in all honesty, what Oregon is doing with Dylan Gabriel this year is not going to be good for the world of college football, because there's a lot of schools that are going to go out and try to get the hired gun. But I think that the reality of it is that Bo Nix came in year one, he was really good because he had continuity with a play caller that he'd been with before in Kenny Dillingham at Auburn. And then year two, you saw his growth because of the familiarity with his receivers, and the scheme shift between Kenny Dillingham to Will Stein was not monumental. It was very subtle.
Yes.
In what they did schematically to change, and they kept so much the same. Year two was better mm-hmm. for Bo Nix. Could you imagine if Dylan Gabriel had a year two with this offense and with mm-hmm. Will Stein and with the pieces that he builds chemistry and continuity with?
Is he still leading the nation in completion percentage?
I don't know if he's still up at the top, but he's pretty dang close. That is, it is not something that's going to happen every year. And Cam Ward at Miami too is another one where, look, Mario Cristobal had a good base.
Scumbag, he fell the second.
Oh man, what a bum.
To Graham Mertz, who was only thrown 94 passes.
But there is a, like, even with Oregon, you look at it and you say they needed a bridge this year because of where their team was at. In waiting in the wings is Dante Moore, Austin Novosad, Luke Moga. Mm-hmm. It's important to have guys that are in line behind whatever that
because
bridge
you
is.
You never know what it's going to be.
And will all three of those guys be there come next fall?
I'd be shocked.
I would be stunned.
Yeah. One, because, again, they're three high-profile quarterbacks.
Who have multiple years to play left.
You very rarely get who I think a Novosad or a Miller Moss, guys who come to a program and want to be a part of that program and sit there and wait.
Well, hell, Luke Moga, who came in as a highly touted prospect, mm-hmm. Dylan Gabriel says, I'm coming to Eugene. Dante Moore says, I'm coming to Eugene. And he said,
he didn't go out.
I want to compete.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't commit to Oregon not to compete. I want to compete. Like, that is
rare. It's rare.
But how long does that last? And all of those things, you know, everybody's story, each individual's story is different.
Yeah, 100%.
And things change all the time. So, but it's a slippery slope, man.
Yeah. But, I mean, look, I was critical of Deion Sanders as far as, like, talking about bringing in the Louis and everything else, which they didn't do with outside of Shador and Travis.
They did not.
But I've given him his flowers this year because he's just shut up and delivered.
Yeah, he has. He really has.
Like, that's the thing. That's how you know this is real, is because Deion hasn't had to talk. Like, we talked about this with Kirby Smart, having to talk about Georgia and, like, keep it in the zeitgeist and have it be overwhelming all the time.
Yep.
When you're good, you're good. And right this year, like, is Colorado great? No. But are they good? Yeah, they're good. Shador Sanders, you're going to have, however it goes in the NFL draft, the top two draft picks are going to come from your team.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's going to be Shador 1 and Hunter 2, or Hunter 1 and Shador 2. Like, is there a world that isn't the case?
Yeah, it is.
You think that one of the other quarterbacks will go above Shador at this point? Because I don't.
I do. Well, I also think that we could see a world where Travis Hunter doesn't go 1 or 2, and he goes 3rd.
You think two teams would take two quarterbacks in this draft there?
Yeah. I mean, no. I think that you could see an offensive lineman,
Has anybody popped to that point
yet?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, because, look, it is, if you have people who you think are a generational talent that will slide in there, they could move up.
I guess Will Campbell's the only one that's really profiled.
And
that.
Like, okay, say Tennessee is drafting number 2. Shador goes number 1. Travis Hunter does not fit their profile of the player that they need. Right? Like, he really, because at that point, you were just firing a draft pick into the abyss where it's like, yeah, you got a really good player, but what? That's not where you need your help.
They need everything, though.
But that's not where you need, that's not where you start.
If you think he's like, I'll use the Raiders as the example. When you have like a transcendent Heisman Trophy caliber winning kind of two-way player, and I don't think he's as good as this guy, but the Raiders went with Woodson.
Yeah.
You know, and they needed stuff elsewhere then, which is why Charles ended up leaving 8 years later. But
we're using the Raiders as, hey, look at this. Let's do what they did.
This is when they were good still. They were good still. Just saying. When you've got a transcendent kind of player, regardless of position, I think at that spot.
I think it's just too early to tell. I think that's where we're at right there. All right. Hey, let's get to hour number two. Who should the Ducks want in the Big Ten championship game? Ohio State, Indiana, or Penn State? Danny Dusty on the Fan.